Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining me on today's show, we have got, I think it's an interesting story. I think a lot of times we seem to forget that how we dress has such a huge impact, not only on what people judge us, but like how we feel. And in particular, Dana Todd from Baylor Dana, she comes in and sort of it's so refreshing because she's had like a million different looks, a million different careers. And ultimately, the one thing that I caught out of it that I thought was particularly interesting quote was that we perpetuate women's insecurities with the way that we outfit the clothing, and we don't allow them to have any sort of any customization, any sort of like design into what they to like what their actual stuff is. It's like a one size fits all. And if you feel uncomfortable with it, then, you know, the hell with you. And I think we're starting to see this, that there's changes here and there's more of a craft approach to clothing. And the other part about that's interesting is if you are keep up with this kind of stuff, if I asked you what percentage of retail is online, you'd probably tell me 60, 70% or more. If you're in the know, it was 11% last year, 16% is the latest numbers. That's crazy. The market opportunity is just insane. And obviously Amazon's eating a lot of it up, but marketplaces like Baylor Dana, I think are also going to have their niche, and they can make a ton of money doing it. So before I get into the conversation with Dana, got to check out that startup showcase. Martin Jennings, Outsource Tech. I'm just starting to outline my core product line. At what point should I outsource tech development to my company? Outsourcing your tech is not as much about outsourcing the actual development of the technology as much as it's outsourcing the team. So if you're trying to build an MVP and you don't have a bunch of money, like the whole objective at the MVP is to build something that you can like get something out of it, data-wise, something that is actually usable, test with it. It's never going to be in production mode. So spending a bunch of money on onshore and in-house, unless you or your co-founders are technical, on the MVP is kind of a waste of money unless you're spending it on things that you need to have in order to prove your thesis. Outsourcing to just build a product is fine so long as you don't anticipate scaling that product. When you talk about time to go offshore or to outsource your product build, the choice of outsource is onshore or offshore or a combination of both. I think that you need to stop looking at outsourcing and offshore from the standpoint of the technology, the actual development, and more about the people that are going to do it. Am I going to set up an offshore team that is dedicated to me and is not nearly as expensive and works faster than what my current team is? And that's an asset that I use to sort of fuel my rocket when you need it. That's offshore, and that's when you need to use it. Outsourcing just to augment your team and to build a component of your tech stack that's not necessarily a key feature, only your customers can tell. It really comes down to like who needs you the most, I think. And that's the part that I think ultimately a lot of people don't quite understand, is that when you're building technology, you need to focus not on what you want as much as what your customers will use. So with that said, the Startup Inbox is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. See why 65,000 businesses use ActiveCampaign for their marketing by signing up at ActiveCampaign.com/Technori. Get your first 2 months for free. Now, let us fall into the interview. Great conversation I had here with Dana Todd, CEO, founder of Baylor Dana.
So I noticed you had some other retail guests on recently. So retail is kind of a thing.
Yeah, well, I mean, retail is definitely a thing. We've had a bunch of early stage companies and late. I mean, just there's so many. I mean, we'll just jump right in. There's so many different things going on in retail now that, I mean, whether you're looking at it from like, how do you drive return customers to it, whether it's using like charities, things like Shopping Gives, or if you're talking about like Brightside and things like that are totally taking a spin on like how to purchase things differently. There's a stat that I heard about a year ago, so it's probably outdated, but it was like somebody asked me, like, if you could guess what percentage of stuff is bought online, what would it be? And my instincts were like 60 or 70%. And it was like 11. 16 or 18% or whatever you said it was.
Well, you're right. It's up to 16 now. It was 11 until just the most recent batch of stats came in, and it's over the 50.
And I was like, how is that possible? And then it's like that. And so when you wonder, like, while Amazon is crushing it and Target has its thing, there is an insane amount of growth. I mean, it's like, I don't know if there's more growth opportunity in any other industries, really. Real estate maybe might be the only one. And even that, like, you could argue. So very interesting stuff. I'd love to know sort of just your background before we even go into like the company, like just your, you know, what brings you into this?
Well, so I will first confess that I did not start off in fashion, although I have always loved fashion. Short of having paper dolls and drawing designs when I was a kid, I never entertained the idea of having a career in fashion. It was not something that just wasn't to be done. But what I did do...
I want to ask you, why was that not to be done? Because I hear this from other people also, and it's sort of this like... It's either the parents or it's people who are just saying like, is that something you can do as a career? Like, are you, you know?
Well, don't get me off on a rant because that is actually, it's a huge fallacy. And actually, I never thought about it until I got into this industry. Honestly, I fell into this and started researching it about 3 years ago. And so that's where I sort of coming in with a tech angle. And as a woman in tech angle, one of the very first things that I realized, and we have an advisor who's with, she's a sage chair over at the Chicago Art Institute, yeah, School of Design over there. And she said, you wouldn't believe what a gap there is of people who are doing the technical jobs, the programming and all the cool tech that they need. There's a huge innovation opportunity here. And a light bulb went off and I was like, well, this is the thing that could potentially keep girls in STEM careers, because they are told it's fine to draw pictures until you get to be of age, and then you have to go find a real career. But the reality is there are significant real careers. There's a huge buildup of need right now for women, men, anybodies to come in who have technology backgrounds to come in and create innovations in this space. It is green field right now.
I think I said this to, I want to say it was to the CEO of the Tie Bar, I believe.
Yeah.
It was, she had just taken over, I don't know, it was like pretty early in her run now. And I was telling her this quote from Sarah Silverman, of all people, a comedian, and she was saying in one of her bits, she's like, you know, we tell little girls, like, you too could become president. And it's like, why would you say that? It never would have occurred to her that she couldn't.
Yes.
Like, and now as a father of a baby girl, now I'm like, now I hear these things. When I hear them, like, that's a strange thing to say to somebody. And I think it's so true. It's like, how many great... musicians, great artists, great athletes, great everythings have we not gotten to see because somebody early on was like, well, you know, we don't do that. It's like, yeah, why not?
Yeah. It's considered silly.
Yes.
And it's not a serious career.
Building a business around a podcast is seen to have been silly. I was told that by multiple people, which is why I took out a credit card to get to this point. Well, like,
and look at you now, right?
Look at me now. Yeah. No, but like, it's true. Like, even my mother, who's been the biggest pusher of me in my career, making sure that I continue to do things, was like, do you know how they make money now? And I was like, well, they don't. And I was like, okay, so you're going to go into something that you don't. They don't even know how to make money with it. And you think you do. I'm like, I think I do.
Right. Well, I'm lucky. I come from pioneer stock. My great grandma actually came to Texas in a covered wagon. So we're not afraid of unknowns in my family.
Say, there you go. Well, then I hope you don't listen to the first podcast where I had before this one, where I said that the only real cowboys come from New Mexico. That said, I spent a lot of time in Dallas, Texas, and I went to the Alamo, and I've been all kinds of places in San Antonio and Houston. So my Texas credibility is good. Big Dallas Cowboys fan growing up. So hopefully I'm getting back in your graces here.
It's
an interesting story. So tell me a little bit more about this. So you the pioneer DNA comes in, and it's like, you're seeing this opportunity. You don't listen to the naysayers, and you're just like, oh, we're doing this.
So I'll back up a little bit. So first of all, Ballodana is my third company.
Okay.
My first company was a digital agency in San Diego that I ran with some partners there. And we made some of the first websites on the internet. Like, my first website was $1 million website. It had all the bells and whistles that were available in 1996.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a big deal back then. So I started out in digital product development, was very instrumental early on, built my career in digital marketing before Google was anything.
Yep.
We were creating the space for digital marketing and trying out anything and everything. So I got to feed my pioneer DNA with lots and lots of new experiences, and had wonderful clients that allowed us to experiment and play. So I had I've had a life, an entire career of nothing but innovation. My second company, which spun out of SiteLab, our agency, was called NewsForce. And at the time, and you can appreciate this, being a media company, the options for monetizing news were very limited online. They really were. It was banner ads.
Depending on who you ask, they still are.
Yes, it is. How do we do
it? It spun around.
Yeah. So we had invented essentially an ad tech play that was specific for news. And our vision was to bridge the gap between the public relations industry, PR, news press, news releases, things like that, and creating, using, utilizing that as content to go into sponsored content that would feed into a typical ad unit, but triple the value of that through a platform that had interstitials. It was awesome. We were doing gangbusters. We had clients. We had over 500 newspapers across the U.S. who were carrying our system. And then the recession, boom, 2008, just made all innovation stop for about 2 years. And certainly the investment, we were bootstrapped with a little bit of angel, friends and family, but we didn't get our first institutional round. So unlike our competitor, who also had a $1 billion valuation, they survived.
Yeah.
We did not. So to be honest, it hurt. It hurt really bad as an entrepreneur to have put so much into that 6 years designing the system to see success right in your hand and just kind of have to like, damn, we shut it down, killed.
So you take that. I mean, I feel like the experience, that's actually a really good learning experience, I think, for most people. That so I was also struck with the recession when I was in commercial real estate. So that was really, but like I actually made more money during the recession than I made without it, because I was scooping up, capital, and I was scooping up nuisance properties. But for those around me who were falling like dominoes, I literally could experience the I guess for my sake, it's resourcefulness, but like to see the distress and to show that like everything was going great. Everything. You were doing all the right things. Yep. Market winds changed and that's it. Dried up. Yeah. And like you, I think, I wonder if people, and I know a lot of founders who are very successful and they all have a story that somewhere around stems in that recession, because before that, you have a propensity to have like a blame game or to feel this sense of like you have to be perfection or everything has to be right or we can't go live. And I think the people who went through that stuff realize that, like, shit happens. There's, like, nothing you can do.
It really does. And so I'd
love to know. Like, so, like, at that point, you see that happens. It's not out of, it's kind of out of your control a little bit. How does that shape you to then get to this point where you're like, I'm going to go into this retail space and we're going to do things differently and we're going to attack, and we'll get into this on the show. But I feel like, you know, one of the things that's interesting about what you're doing is there's still a, you know, there's Trunk Club and things like that have existed. There's still a gigantic problem with, and it's perpetuated by retail, you know, by online retail, in the sense that people don't know their style. They don't try things on anymore. They don't, the gone is the day where, and I say women because whatever, but like my mom would go to the store with her sisters and they would try stuff on and they would look at each other and like, oh, I love your, you know, it looks good or you don't look good. Yeah. That doesn't happen anymore.
Girls don't do that.
Certain age, obviously, but like I, the millennial girls that I know, they just shop on my wife. She just on Nordstrom's. It's just on the app.
It's
done.
Return culture. Buy 10, return 7.
So they don't know. Yeah. They don't know what to wear. They don't know what their style is. They don't. And as a result, all of the retail and companies don't get sales, more or less, or tons of returns.
It's true, and it's a little more complicated than just women don't. Because part of that is symptomatic, yes, of e-commerce and yes, changing methods for attaining things.
Yep.
But it's also. So we've just, and this is literally how I ended up realizing that I needed to build a whole new company was, you asked what I did after we shut down NewsForce. I did not immediately run out and start my next venture. In fact, I limped over, took a corporate job and thought that was going to be safe for a while.
Sometimes it's nice to have like just a quiet ride.
Yeah, it was. So what I found is that I really missed being an entrepreneur. And then in reality, once you're at the C-suite, I was a chief marketing officer. Frankly, your life is not stable as a chief marketing officer either.
But you're the first one to hear the rumble.
Yeah.
So you're like,
bye-bye. Yeah. Anything bad happens, the CMO gets the axe first. So it's a total joke with CMOs. Like we used to sit around at the CMO club all the time and just laugh about like, hey, you're on month 13. How's that? You know,
18 months and out. That's the run.
That's the deal. So I realized in about 2015 that I wanted another venture, and I had another one in me. But I honestly had no idea what the business model was. But I literally had a leap of faith that I was going to do another business, and I set up the legal name of the construct. I created the vessel, as it were, and then waited for the universe to start delivering some hints. And about 2016, I guess it was, I decided to... Those of you who are on the radio do not see that my hair is natural gray. So if you had known me back in my digital marketing years, that my brand, my personal brand, was this extreme shocking hair color. Like, before everybody else had crazy purple hair, I had crazy purple hair. I had fire engine red hair. I had lavender hair. I had polka dotted hair. I had, you name it, I had that hair my entire life. And then I felt very strongly in 2016 to see what my natural hair color looked like, which was a big, it seems you have no idea like what a big deal this is as a woman to just allow yourself to be natural, and in tech to allow yourself to look over 40.
Kiss, I will say, I just saw this yesterday, that the most trending hair color for women right now, young and old,
boom, gray.
Doesn't matter.
I'm always a trendsetter.
You're a trendsetter.
I am a trendsetter.
You started years ago setting this up.
Exactly. But one thing that happens when you change your hair color radically is that you have to change your wardrobe.
I would suspect so. Yes. So this is a stupid question. Do you shock it? Like, what do you do with the hair to get, like, do you just let it roll out? And like, did you do it the literal natural way? Or like, just going to let this grow so that half of your hair is changing colors as you go? Or you're like, no, we're going to shock this into...
No, we worked carefully with the hairdresser.
I didn't know how daring you were.
Oh, no, I wasn't sure. That would have looked horrible. No, I can't look bad.
No one can say that.
Half and half hair, that would be gross. No,
it could have been a new trend.
It did take a while, though. We had to cut it short. You do this low lighting thing, and you grow it out in stages.
Yeah.
It's almost as much work as having it colored is hiding the grow out. I think we did a pretty good job.
Yeah, it looks great.
Yeah, so this is all me. But it created a bit of a shock to my wardrobe as well. So, and the other thing, too, I'm going to say a lot of things that a lot of people don't talk about as a woman.
That's what makes this show great.
Exactly. So let's talk about being old, right? So
okay.
I'm 54.
My mom will not let me say that's old.
FYI. I don't think it's old either.
I actually don't. I'm not just saying because you're sitting here and that she's listening. I don't either.
What's this? Tech is a youth culture, right?
Yes, it definitely, 100%.
It absolutely idolizes. I read Business Insider every day, and I want to throw my phone through the window because every other day is a 30 under 30 or a 20 under 20 or a 16 under 16.
I was hoping you were going to say because of the shitty writing, but yeah, that also. That's another thing.
We won't go there with the clickbait. Yes, but no, we idolize youth. And I am all about the youth. Trust me, my entire staff is millennials and below. I think there's wonderful things to be learned. But I run circles around them because I already know what to do, where everything is, how to get there.
It's funny how experience has a role, isn't it?
It's amazing. I was freaking out a little bit inside because now I had taken away my, you know, Superman cape of red hair and purple hair. And I couldn't wear suits anymore because now that you have gray hair, if you wear a suit, you're definitely not in touch with
what's cool. So that's not being funky. That's just being like an old chick.
Precisely. And I would look like a banker or something, right?
You don't want that.
No. Which is not me. I'm a really radical personality. I always have been in the industry and any industry that I jump into. And so I was like, crap, I need some cool clothes. So I started looking around for cool clothes. Well, the only cool clothes were made for incredibly young and thin people. So they didn't have, you know, a menopause body. And my friend calls it her hamster body. Yay, hamster body. Thanks, menopause. I'm not gonna go lose weight. Sorry, y'all. This is me, right? I'm gonna do what I need to do for where I am right now, and not just live for the someday. So I was really frustrated.
Create a new hashtag.
I think we should.
I can't
body.
Do this. You can.
Hamster
when you get this, you can share it and say hashtag hamster body. If I say that, I'll get the shit kicked out of me, and this will be over.
Oh, I love it. It's my favorite line.
So I
couldn't find any clothes, and I did find some clothes on Etsy that were with this really cool Romanian designer. She does all this edgy streetwear stuff. So it's very young styles, but not inappropriate. They're not scanty or anything. They're just amazing structures and very creative styles. And everything could be made to measure. And I didn't even know you could do that. I mean, we've been so entrenched in this country, we've forgotten that actual humans so close, right? From beginning to end. Yep. Our only experience of that is buying it on the rack. We've been cut out of the process for over 40 years now, much longer actually, yeah, for major cities or people who are not, you know, having
bespoke
access.
Bespoke is not where we're at.
It's not, and particularly for women. And it's become so problematic that we're away from that, that now even when you go online, one of the things when you go to shop, they'll ask you, you click on the size guide, it'll ask you what your waist and bust and all these measurements are. Women don't even know their measurements. We've been so cut out of the process. We don't know what size we really are. We don't know how things are made. We don't have an awareness of the construction and the quality that goes in. We're just really victims of what we have as options right now. So when I discovered that there was a workaround, I was like, well, this is kind of awesome. But I didn't love the experience on Etsy. I didn't like the customer experience. It was really, it was a clunky. I couldn't remember my measurements from time to time. And I was just like, where is that piece of paper? And I was like, this would be so much better if it was just a special little mall where everything was made to measure and there was a centralized profile that would remember who I am and let me put in my preferences and still allow me to have this kind of relationship with these dressmakers all over the world. Because I was digging talking to them and seeing my garments being made and having some communication and that human element. And suddenly, frankly, that's when the light went off and I went, bam, that's my next thing. Because that's what I do. I make customer experiences. I make systemic solutions that connect this to that to this to that and grow it. That's what
I do. It's so funny to me. Like, this is the third podcast that I've done today. And all three of them have this like common thread that the people behind it are really just builders.
Yep.
And like, the product almost doesn't matter. Like, as long as you're passionate about the product and the project at the time. Like, we talked about Will Malnati, who's from the Lou Malnati family of Lou Malnati's Pizza. And he's like, you know, I grew up in the family business of this. And then I started getting involved in hospitality because it was kind of, I knew the space and I had the connections. Now I run a media company. It has nothing to do with any of it. But I use the same principles as my dad does with Lou Malnati's. And I just think it's fascinating to me when you find people who are like, I really just understand design. I understand value that people want from things. And I understand, like, how do I deliver that value to them in a way that fits the margins? And as long as I love it and it's something I can feel in my, like, in my soul,
yeah,
then I stay on the pulse and I can keep up with it. If I don't, that's where things get a little bit wonky.
Agreed.
So as you get this thing rolling, what is the big aha moment when you're like, this is going to be legit. Like, I think we got something here.
Well, it really gelled for me when I started running the numbers. You know, you put the spreadsheet together, right? And you look at, okay, how can I build this? How can I scale this? And I started talking to women. So I started talking to every woman I knew. Like, have you ever had anything custom made? You know, what would you, how would you feel if everything you could get was custom made? How would you feel about that? And I got nothing but overwhelmingly positive responses. And in fact, many of the women in the 40 plus range actually remembered what it was like to be able to get good quality clothes and to have things made to measure, or at least, you know, like a family dressmaker who could do something for you. It's particularly strong in African American and Latina groups as well, because you've got a stronger cultural identification to sewing and to clothes that are made to measure. So it all the research that I did, every box was checked. Go. We've got a ready market here. There's an actual need. Do I have merchants? Why, yes, there's a bunch of them I can find. And I flew to Romania and I drew on a napkin sketch. I actually met the lady
I happened
to be going there with my alumni college, because doing a, that's a whole other story, addressing the fake news in Moldova with the consulate there. Yeah.
Hey, you know what?
I get these exciting adventures in my life. It's a cool, yeah, it's a cool to be me. Way. It's very cool to be me.
I think people need to enjoy who they are a lot more. Yeah. I think people, like, they hide from the treachery.
Yeah.
Like the fun shit that you get into and you're like, probably shouldn't have done that.
It's just yes, try. I do get into trouble continuously.
But that's what makes you interesting. Like, yeah, the people who don't get into trouble are the ones that we have a podcast that lasts 4 minutes and then we go home. Because it's like, so tell me this one daring time you took a leap in the company. It's like, Well, I'm a consultant, and it's like, all right, well, and out.
And out.
So you've gone to Romania, you checked this thing out, you're starting to realize like there's a total need here, which I completely get. I think it's not a coincidence that we don't talk about the fact that everyone who looks beautiful in a magazine, all the clothing they're wearing on the red carpet is completely tailored for them.
It is.
And the day that you're supposed to look your most magical, your wedding day, totally everything is completely tailored for you. And then the rest of the time, they just like throw you in this random little box cutter and that's it. Zip it up. And that's it. So you realize that there's a need for it. You realize that there's an opportunity. Now you're taking on all the things you know from digital marketing and you're off to the races.
I wish it was quite that easy, but yeah. That is
I left
basically
out all the heartache.
And then magic happens. That's what engineers say,
by the way.
It
can sometimes.
we built this fast. One of the very first things that we did was look around for, is there a ready-made solution? So, you know, these days, if you're in e-commerce, nobody really does custom development much anymore. You're just like, I'll just get me some Shopify and we'll be good.
Yep.
Right? So that's
you built an app that can tell your measurements and then that's it.
Exactly. But to marketplace, it's actually much more complicated than I ever expected.
Yep.
It is a significant piece of technology. And the marketplace solutions that we did find out there were not particularly customizable for our needs. So we did find a partner in Canada. There's somebody nobody's ever heard of. They're behind the scenes. This guy's been doing marketplaces for 20 years. And they had essentially a hybrid SaaS, a software as a service, but it could be heavily
customized.
Toronto's
got some good tech, believe it or not. I don't know if you're in Toronto, but.
They're in Barrie, Ontario.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah.
But no, they're fantastic. And in fact, they secretly run some of Google's marketplaces, too.
There you go.
Yeah. So they helped us accelerate the MVP, which is the minimum viable product. As I'm sure your listeners know,
at this point, they probably
audience.
Know, but yeah.
Okay, well, I hate to use acronyms and assume that everybody knows what that means.
Got that MVP, go to Mark, a quick PMF, raise some capital, a little VC.
VC, yes. we didn't start laying code until, say, last July. We hit it with, we had all the brand, the design work, and the UI kind of roughly sketched out. And then went in to start laying code in July. So we had a very fast fast development cycle, all things considered.
Yeah.
We didn't get out with everything that we wanted, but we were live literally the day before Christmas. We told our the people who were supporting us that we'd be live by Christmas, and by God, we made it.
You got it.
We got it. Taking sales. We are here. So there's a lot of working parts in this and a lot of training. So some of it is a technical solution. The other part of it is dealing with the supply chain itself, creating not just the technology for what we call our merchants or the designers who use our platform to put their wares in. But we found that we had to do an awful lot of heavy lifting because for many of them, they are English is a second language, obviously. So they may be they're time limited for sure, resource limited, and often language limited. So we were doing a lot of heavy lifting to onboard them and make everything just right. And at the same time, working to start having the discussion out there in the world with women. Okay, we built it. Now y'all come, right? You said you'd be here. Let's do this thing. And I'll confess, the first 60 days, we only got like a few sales and they were basically people I knew.
Yeah.
Yeah, we sold some gift certificates and we found pretty quickly that the assumptions that we had made around the e-commerce acquisition were different. It behaves differently as a model than a traditional e-commerce play. Even though it looks like e-commerce, you buy it like e-commerce. Our catalog is full of pictures, just like a regular e-commerce experience. You have a shopping cart, checkout. Everything feels exactly like that, except for one big missing piece, and that's the measurements. That is literally the biggest obstacle. And so the discoveries that I'm making as we go on this are... It's really fascinating. You start, when you go into the measurements, you figure out, okay, why don't we know measurements? Why are women afraid of measurements? And that leads you to a 50-long history in manufacturing and branding where we have systematically destroyed any standardization whatsoever in sizing.
Yeah.
Systematically destroyed it. So that now every human, mostly women, at least guys, right? You probably have a few numbers that you know. If I asked you your neck size, what's your neck size?
No idea.
Really?
Yeah.
You've never bought a formal shirt?
This is obviously not custom, but like all my suits, dress shirts, everything is tailored. I have a tailor guy who does it in Hong Kong, but like I, he came here. I went to his place. He wrapped me up with a bunch of stuff. I didn't ask.
There you go. So, but he knows your measurements, right?
Yeah, I suppose. I feel like whatever large is large 17 and a half or something. Is that large?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, it's like for a neck. Yeah.
No idea.
See, now if you had a Ballodana profile, you could put all your measurements in and then you'd have them for access anytime you wanted to.
The problem with me is that the measurements change in certain areas quite frequently.
Oh, they change for everybody.
I go up and down
areas.
And I'm like, yeah. I'm a skinny guy, I'm a fat guy, I'm a skinny guy, I'm a fat guy.
Everybody, every human has, you know, a 5 to 10 pound swing in on any given month, right? Yeah. That's normal.
Sometimes
and
it's
most
more.
Tailors assume. Well, that's true.
Yeah, just let that out and that'll be the end of that suit.
Well, a good tailor, and this is why when you do get a really good investment piece of like a blazer or something, they will work with you to actually even build in a little extra cloth, things like that.
Yeah.
So the intent working with a good tailor is that you're going to be buying something that should last you way longer than your typical fashion cycle, if not the rest of your life. I loved hearing this anecdote that, you know, Prince Charles, who obviously has some money.
Yeah,
right?
He's all right.
He has all of his jackets and suits mended. The tailors that he's worked with, he's had these suits basically his entire life. And they keep
boxes. He does strike me as a pack rat, though.
Yeah, possibly.
Like, you see him, like, doesn't he feel like if he'd be a hoarder?
Like, I feel like he's got a lot of other issues,
yeah, I was going to say, he's got some other stuff that he's been
amending.
But at
least he's not a spendthrift on suits, right? He's keeping...
No, it's funny because he strikes as a person who probably has a newspaper from the late 70s. That's all.
God, can you imagine if that's that wing of the castle you never get to see on those tours,
it's
going
to go
right?
up in smoke.
That's a whole new thought process for me. I'm going to have to go chew on that.
You're going to have to go and see the hoarder wing. And
oh, God. It'd be funny. That'll
oh,
be old
man.
News
no, this is fascinating. I completely agree with you. I feel like the marketplace is in itself is a differentiator. And then the ability to sort of harness the desire and the need and the... for lack of a better term, the weak points of people forgetting their measurements or not knowing their measurements, and sort of like getting people closer to the bespoke sort of thing, mm-hmm. is inherently great marketing also, because it's like you want people to come back. If everything they wear from you, they feel good in.
Yes.
And they don't have an experience of putting clothing on that's going to feel bad.
Yes.
They're going to go to you first. It's like, oh, I love a pair of jeans that doesn't make me feel like a sausage. Like that is... Yes. That's my goal in life.
There's a little bit of a learning curve and an adoption curve, but once you do it, once you get over that, then
you can attest to it.
I walk into a regular store now and I'm just like, ugh, am I going to have to navigate
this? I only
buy
gym shorts and golf stuff just because whatever.
Yeah.
I don't buy anything else non-tailored because it's a waste of time.
And I think guys have had a lot more privilege around
for
that
sure.
than women have, because we just don't have the options. There's no options for us.
Even Joseph A. Banks tailors your stuff.
Yes.
Three suits for $199 and they have tied the tailor.
It's true. It's true. And well, Nordstrom used to be the ones who kind of had the angle on that, but they've really limited themselves to hemming and a little bit of taking in on suits and stuff. And again, it's always just like suits, right?
It's not clothing.
And most women don't wear suits anymore, unless you're an attorney or a banker or you have a job that requires it.
And we don't want any of them around.
Well, they're marvelous people. I used to have the most amazing suits. They made me feel really
powerful. The bankers.
Oh, the bankers.
I don't want the bankers and the attorneys around. We got enough of those guys.
I was going to say, I feel like that there's a sponsor of yours.
Yeah, you met them in there. They don't have to be here now.
Okay.
I tell them, if they wear a red tie, they can show up in the back area and go to the green room. But if they wear a red tie, they are not allowed in this room.
Aww.
We don't do red ties here.
Sponsors are awesome.
No, I love my sponsor. I'm just obviously joking. But,
teasing them.
But bankers and lawyers, they are hard to like.
Well, and they're but they need suits. But the rest of the people in the world, especially women, are trying to navigate what is a life as a professional, and particularly executive, without wearing a suit.
Yeah.
And how do I find good looking clothes? So part of it is the fit. The other part of it is the quality, because if you have high quality fabric and construction, that's going to do your body proud as well. And our current supply chain does not allow either of those. So you have zero customization in terms of the fit. You have a huge just disaster, a chaos of sizing options, none of which are standardized. And you've got a diminishing quality because of the margin pressures that are being placed on the supply chain. And so you've now got a situation where, and this is real, I was talking to one of our merchants in India, and in India, it is not uncommon, and I've asked around, and secretly you'll find out, somewhere between 10 and maybe 25% of the garment tag is what went into the production of that, including the fabric and the labor. So
they hide that just as much as we hide food.
Yeah. All the rest of that is markup and tariffs and taxes and shipping and marketing and all of those add-on costs.
So those people don't get paid anything and everyone else makes money on it.
Exactly. So what happens in our model, because we're a marketplace, we take a 20% commission off the top. So 80% is it's the reverse, right? Yeah. So it's the flip. 80% is going into that, going directly to the maker so they can buy better cloth. They can take longer to make it. They can spend more time on it. They can customize to you. They can pay their people a living wage and also benefits and, you know, a lot of things that are very, very nice for humans to have in their lives. So when I started looking at the benefits of custom made beyond just fit, it's really incredible. And I'm shocked and saddened that we haven't really noticed this before in our country. We really haven't. We've been lulled into the ease. And now with Amazon's, well, like your wife, right? No, Buy 10, return 7. It is so easy for you to never leave your house and be able to have the world at your doorstep. But the flip side is all that return culture is creating lots of waste.
Yep.
Lots of clothing in landfills are being dumped off on third world countries where it disrupts their economies as well. It's being burned by, you know, the billions of pounds per year.
Big time companies don't want it to go on the third, secondary markets.
Exactly. Or in some cases, you can't throw it in a landfill. Yeah. You know, you have to burn it. Although sadly, some clothing cannot be burnt because it's made of such toxic materials.
Yeah, which is a whole other thing.
Whole other conversation. Yeah. But there's just so much bad in our current garment industry. And it's been built on 150 years now of industrial revolutionary thinking that has not allowed any innovation whatsoever. And the net result of this is that now every woman in America, when she goes to shop, wherever she goes to shop, can only buy China-made goods and only with this incredibly reduced margin.
I think that this is actually really interesting to me in the sense that there are, I think like you said, there are marketplaces for like a million things, but there aren't for women's clothing like this.
That's right.
And I think it's really interesting that you've put this whole thing together. Where do people go to learn more about this and how do they use it? Like, how does a person go on and start shopping?
Well, you go, first of all, it'd be nice if you had your measurements and you can literally have a friend do it or go down to your local dry cleaners and they'll do it for free in most cases. And you can fill it out on our website. It's ballodana.com, ballodana.com. I will say that we have about 12 merchants live on the website right now covering close to 800 different items that are in rotation. We're adding on 4 more. We keep adding these on over and over. So we intend to have ultimately thousands of garments that women can buy. The price point we didn't talk about. We have garments as low as $50, and then we have premium stuff from our London suppliers. Yeah. You know, that are a little bit more what you'd expect, like $1,000. No, but they're gorgeous.
It's private
stock. It's about $1,000 for a blazer, but it's one that you'll literally hand down to your grandchildren.
Yeah.
So we have all ranges. We have something for everyone, and it literally is that key to custom. What I call the cult of custom. Your key to cult of custom is not being afraid of your measurements, not being afraid of the process. Go out, get your measurements. It will literally take you 15 minutes, and then you can unlock the whole world.
Very cool. I appreciate you taking the time to come in.
Thank you so much.
This is fascinating. All right. You can learn more about upcoming Technori events, investment opportunities. Check out the blog at technori.com. Download the podcast on Apple Podcasts. Follow us on social at Technori, or you can follow me at Katoon. Boom. That's a wrap.